travelers, and welcome back to another episode of the Lumieres podcast. Thank you for joining us, and today we've got a chat with Martin Thomas, who is one of the co-founders of Zoo Studios in Lewis, or which was a Zoo Studios, and is no longer in its current incarnation, as you'll find out in our chat. But he, along with a crew of friends and artists, they founded this studio space and workshop space in Lewis, took a journey with the whole thing, and you'll hear all about the history of Zoo and what it's grown into. It's become kind of more than the sum of its parts these days. And if you've been around Brighton and Lewis in the last 10 years, you might have heard people talk about it. They used to do some fantastic monthly parties there. They had great talks and workshops, and it was just a magical space to go and look around. And sadly, that is no longer there. But the team have been busy over the winter and over the course of last year, and they've been conceptualizing their next movements, which has resulted in the Zootopia Festival, which is going to be held in Sussex this summer. It sounds beautiful for a small festival full of vibrant workshops and beautiful music. So I'd highly encourage you to check out the website and see what you think about possibly going along to that later on. And Martin talks a fair bit about that and, you know, the challenges he's faced trying to organise his first festival and what's going to be going on there in terms of music and talks and workshops and all that lovely stuff. So, yeah, I do hope you enjoy this chat. Thank you so much for your time and thank you for listening. Very grateful as ever. If you want to write me, you can drop me a line through the website, which is www.lumierespodcast.com. There's a contact form on there. Or you can hit me up via Twitter or Facebook. The links are all at that website that I've just mentioned. If you're interested in Zootopia, and you should be, the website is www.zootopia.space. Pretty cosmic. And if you enjoyed this podcast, you can help us out by please sharing and subscribing. Tell people about it and keep on spreading the word. I'll be back in a couple of weeks and my guest will be Carolyn Cowan, yoga teacher extraordinaire. So please do join me for that. I'm going to play you out with what felt like a fitting song for today, which is called Serenade. It's by Emiliana Torini, who is a singer-songwriter. I think she's kind of semi-Icelandic origin, but she's based in the UK and has been for a number of years. And she released an album in 2005 called Fisherman's Woman, which is just full of exquisite acoustic, beautiful, short little songs. Very, very kind of the sort of stuff that passes by fairly quickly and leaves a mark that lasts. It's a mark of some good stuff, I think. And so this is the track that rounds out her record, and this is called Serenade.
Picturesque in its stance, midnight calling, moonlight shadows start to dance, for the dark finds ways of being, engraved in the light, and the heart bears in temptation. Yesterday's hurt in child, and now we will run with smiles. Tomorrow we'll heal the night, so morning comes. Midnight, make fast with the sun. I can hear my name, baby boy. Within the sky beneath the door. Oh, I serenade the door. Serenade the door. Serenade the door. For the dark finds ways of being, engraved in the light, and the heart bears in temptations of yesterday's hurting child. And now we will run with smiles. The morrow will heal the night so morning comes. Midnight, make fast with the sun. I can hear my name, baby born, on the cloud within the sky beneath the dawn. Oh, why serenade the door, serenade the door, serenade the door.
Yeah, I've been working with woodwork and creating spaces for quite a few years, but I suppose the origin of the sort of history of Zoo going back a few chapters previous to that, it really started after a partner of mine died quite suddenly.
How old were you, or how many years ago are we talking?
So that was 2002.
Yeah.
June 2002. This was an amazing woman called Lourdes, who we'd been together 5 years, and we'd just moved to New Haven and been living in this house in New Haven. And literally, like, 2 or 3 weeks after we moved in, she died very suddenly. And, yeah, obviously that was a crazy start of this horrible time.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to even describe it then, but it...
Sure.
But it put me into this period of maybe a couple of years of just a process of grieving and... you know, I went to America and Australia and did some sort of just part of the grieving process out there. But I came back, or rather, actually, the start was at the wake, which was only a few weeks after she died. And it was this incredible experience of all of these amazing people who had known her and come from all different places and from around the world. And a lot of them had never met each other. You know, it was really extraordinary.
That's beautiful. She was bringing people together.
She was bringing people together there, and it was the heights of celebration. And it was this incredibly, it was just this tangible... feeling of celebrating her and going, so you know that this feeling of you can't go any higher in terms of that wanting to honor her and celebrate her, and then that would just go down to the lowest depths of grief and despair.
Yeah.
And so I think that was, for me, it was obviously incredibly had a huge effect on me. But that, I think, there was where the seed was sown of wanting to kind of honour and acknowledge her life through bringing people together to...
And I guess seeing the result of that, kind of celebration.
Yeah, and it wasn't necessarily a happy event, obviously.
Yeah.
But I think, again, it's like a lot of cultures treat death in a very different way, and they are a celebration of life, you know. And if you're another big gift that she gave after she left this realm, she made it very clear that she was still very much alive, you know, just in a different place.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd always had a sort of faith that, you know, we are.
There's more.
There is more, and we don't just disappear and that's the end of it. Mm. But that was more in an intellectual kind of trusting and a faith, I suppose. But I had some incredible experiences where she, in a number of different ways, came through. And, yeah, without question, it was her coming through, communicating me in all different ways. So that was really wonderful.
Yeah.
And so then you are just, with that in mind, you are celebrating their moving on and their, if you want to say, maybe their liberation from this realm, form, which is a, you know, can be a very challenging place, but they're in a different place. So then, yeah, I started doing these parties on the beach in New Haven, which is where I'd done a lot of my grieving, and it's this amazing beach with these big white cliffs. And for a few years, just did in the August bank holiday, started off with maybe just 100 or so, but after a few years, there was a few hundred, 300-400 people came down, and over the long weekend, we just...
This was just kind of ad hoc, not kind of informing anyone, just
oh no, back then there was you don't ask permission to do those things,
just party in the woods kind of thing.
Yeah. And again, it was like some strange, I mean, right down the end, I don't know if you've been on New Haven Beach, but
not
you,
for a while, but
you go into the car park and then you go as far as you can, and it is very isolated and not many people. You know, a lot of people in New Haven just sit in their cars in the car park and eat their sandwiches, but this was a little bit further along. And but yeah, that amazed me that we were able to do that without, it was almost like we had an invisible bubble around us.
Yeah, there was never any kind of
the only thing that happened was the last year when, bizarrely, Dieppe Port Authority bought New Haven Port Authority.
Oh.
Another controversial
thing.
And so the year that happened, they the parking warden, who would always open the gate to let me, so for the three previous years, he would let my van in, and he knew that we were doing this, but he was okay with it. And for some reason on this particular year, I think because he had new bosses. And so he phoned them up, and then they got in touch with the police, and the police came down we'd been setting things up. And we were just getting things going, and then the police turn up and go, really sorry. You know, they didn't want to be moving us on. So it was actually quite political then. They were, that was from orders from above, which was effectively from France.
Yeah, that's so weird.
It was bizarre. So anyway,
so
that was...
So then kind of you thought, right, I need to move somewhere else? Or?
So, well, actually even, but we at that stage, we'd already started doing the festivals. So Zuvuya, there's this amazing book called Surfers of the Zuvuya, Jose Aguiar's, and... And again, that's a lovely look at the kind of dimensional world we live in, and, you know, these layers of existence. And so the Zuvuya...
He's the guy that did the Mayan...
Yes.
...interpretation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it is based on the Mayan, a lot of Mayan understandings. And it's the Mayan word Zuvuya is... It's like you could... There's different... interpretations, but you could say it's the wave that we're all surfing collectively now. We're all on our surfboards surfing from third density, third dimension, up into the higher vibrations of fourth and fifth, you know.
This is his thing.
this, yeah, but this is not only his thing. I mean, it is a Mayan. This was
part of their cosmology, or their part, yeah, of their kind of.
And this is where we're all at collectively, yeah, now. So, yeah, so for me, that was like, oh yeah, I can really relate to that, and it, you know, I'm aware that we're all in some form or other part of this change that's going on.
Yeah,
and so then when Zoo Studios came along, and it was kind of, you know, this building which actually had a whole other beautiful story to it, the Phoenix Iron and Steelworks.
Yeah,
you know, so there's this building that's been empty for some time, but that was where all the metal work from the Palace Pier, Brighton Station, Madeira Drive came from that building.
Provided all that, yeah, all that infrastructure.
And so that in itself was a really beautiful thing. But then the building, we take it over. And so Zuvuya was the name, but it just felt right to kind of chop the end off. And so Zoo became, or Zuvuya became Zoo. And yeah, that was where it all kind of kicked off. But before that, the Zuvuya was a geodesic dome at various festivals.
Oh, okay.
And we had a cinema and a cafe bar.
So it was kind of like your event, cutting your teeth in the events and the festival kind of scene.
Exactly. So there was probably three or four years pre Zoo of doing that. And we did Kimberley and Bestival and a few others. And it was great fun, you know, but that was fairly sort of small setup. And so it's now post Zoo, going back to the roots, taking it out into the fields again.
So maybe we should just like clarify for anyone that doesn't know what we're talking about here. This is you are going to be putting on a festival, the first festival you've hosted under the Zoo banner.
Yeah.
For people who don't know what Zoo is or what it's about, it was an arts studio, multidisciplinary arts and workshop space and performance space, based in Lewis, which started, where are we, 10 years ago, was it?
It started in, I was given the keys to the building in November 2007.
So, yeah.
And then we had a kind of official launch on April the 1st, 2008. So April Fool's Day was kind of, I say it was, it kind of still is the birthday.
As fittingly,
yeah.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
I remember, I think I was working in Brighton around that time, and I was working with Carl.
Oh, yeah.
Carl Plebe of the Plebels fame and other things.
He was one of the founders.
I remember him telling me, we're starting this thing in Lewis. It's going to be really cool. You should come check it out sometime. And I was like thinking, what's Lewis? Where's Lewis? Like, my world was just Brighton. Yeah. And then anywhere beyond Brighton at that point was just like, I didn't really venture outside the city, you know, mm-hmm. for years really, other than to go maybe up the Downs every other.
Yeah.
Month, but yeah, so Lewis just was like, what's Lewis? Like, why would you want to go to Lewis kind of thing? So in my periphery back then, when he was telling me about the beginnings of it, it just sounded like this kind of quirky little mad little space that he was setting up. And I kind of he'd kind of keep me informed, you know, and I didn't actually make it out there for years and years, but I remember him telling me about the foundation of it. So it's kind of an interesting link, because I remember him being so excited about the about somewhere that he could build his kind of animation dream, you know.
Yeah.
So how many people were involved in the kind of initial starting of the place as a studio space?
Right in the beginning, there must have been. Well, it's hard to say. There was probably 15 or 20. People there. I remember I had this big box with these white kind of lab coats, brand new lab coats in plastic.
Of course you did.
That had been left in, actually, here's this funny one, where we are now.
Yeah.
So this is in the new Zoo 22, which is a modern warehouse over the road from the old zoo. And I'd been storing all the festival stuff in here. So I was in here before Zoo.
No way.
Yeah, so this is like coming full circle. And the developer back then gave me 3 days notice. So I was just using this as storage building.
Okay.
So I had all the kit in here. And he gave me 3 days notice to move it out because he had, I think it was Lewis Prison, wanted to take it over and store stuff. So he said, don't worry, I've got somewhere else for you to go. So one of his associates came round with the key, took me over the road, and there it was. And I had hardly even noticed the building over there. And
literally over the road.
Right across the road. And we took one look inside and just saw the space and the expanse of it, and it was like, yeah, this will do. This will do nicely. So I shifted everything across there, and to start with, that was still kind of storage, but my mind was just ticking over, going, yeah, there's a lot that we can do here. And then I found friends in Lewis who were artists and people who'd want to share in the adventure. But back to the white coats. So that there was this box here filled with these white coats. And we all ended up on this over a long weekend, which I think was building up to the April the 1st. We were walking around in white coats and hats and goggles and masks. And it was like some strange laboratory thing going on. And because for probably 10 years before that, it had been reproduction furniture. So they'd had MDF dust. There was like half an inch of MDF dust over everything. So it was a big mission to get it sort of ready, you know, clean it up so that we could actually use it. And so we did that probably for a few months. And then, yeah, there was this sort of recycling. You know, people would come, people go. Some people would spend 6 months there. But there was a core crew who were there from the beginning.
And was the intention to kind of, it's bound to have evolved over the years, but the original intention was kind of for a shared space for creativity.
Exactly, yeah.
Or did the performance kind of side of it and the kind of educational side of it come later?
That all happened just naturally. I suppose originally it was workshops, studio space, so it was an artist space. And really it came about through necessity to pay the bills, because we'd suddenly get these massive electricity bills. And so then the events, we'd start putting on parties.
Right.
And then the cinema space upstairs just lent itself to talks and films and what have you. So just very gradually, organically, the shape sort of shifted and changed. And I suppose I should say, in the beginning, the owner, the developer, said you might get a year if you're lucky. So it was always going to, you know, there was always this potential that the developers would get planning permission and we'd have to move on. So that kind of added a twist to it. We were making the most of it while we were there.
Yeah, so this constant kind of sword hanging over it. Oh, is it going to be there next year kind of thing?
Exactly. And I think, you know, slowly as we, energetically somehow, we really made it our own, and it felt like we were, you know, it was almost kind of out of time. We were in this bubble. And it wasn't just Zoo, it was a lot of other spaces around the site. And we were all this collectively, making the most of this space. But that turned into 8 years.
So. Yeah, you managed to keep the sword at bay.
Exactly. And there was a lot of lessons in just being present and, you know.
Yeah, and being, I guess, sharing a space like that and all the kind of conversations and practicalities that come along with doing that with a group of people.
Yeah. It was massive.
Serious bonding experience as well, I imagine. Mm. I mean, there's a lot of people that have been involved with the zoo talk about the family aspect of it and how it feels very inclusive. And I think it sounds to me like that's kind of born out of the core, the process that you went through, you know, to found it, to kind of build it on and to clean it up and to kind of, you know, the ethos was built on cooperation and kind of mutual respect and that kind of stuff. So it's no surprise.
And creating just a space of acceptance and you know, just having a space as, like you say, inclusive and sharing a space of love, you know.
Mm.
And so it was, for me, I just like making spaces. Yeah, I do furniture and build interiors.
So is that your...
Well, that was why I took that space on as a workshop to... So that was my, you know.
Is that your background in you know, what's the kind of, how did you come into the artistic
side? So really,
I've
been doing interiors and furniture for 15 years. Maybe I had a space in Farm Road in Brighton.
Oh, yeah.
In Hove.
Yeah.
And Carl had a space
in that little kind of...
Yeah, the Muse.
Yeah. I used to go and play at a practice studio there.
Okay, well, that was in the next one down. So that was by Cooper's Cask.
Yes, that's the one.
And then the next one up was the Farm Tavern.
Ah, okay.
So, yeah, my space was between two pubs, which was interesting.
So what were you doing there?
So I was there for 10 years, and I had this beautiful, an old stable block as a workshop that I'm a bit of a magpie, so I collect all sorts of stuff, wood and just odd bits and pieces for
sculpture
and what have you. But so I guess that was the connection to come over here originally, was to take on a bigger space.
Is that why
space.
You moved to Lewis?
But I'd been making various things out of wood and for quite some time. And that it was really in that field of just wanting to make a beautiful object or a beautiful space. And, you know, kind of looking at the energetics of, you know, if you want to call it feng shui, or just a kind of instinctive way to make somebody feel comfortable in a space through objects or colour or lighting or, you know.
So you must be relishing the idea of scaling that up to, like... you know, the size of a small festival to
absolutely.
Then apply
that
kind of philosophy to a big field and a woodland and and lots of big tents, and that's quite like, it almost sounds like a bit of a culmination of a dream or something.
No, it is totally, because I've done it in smaller degrees at other festivals, but and it's such a beautiful site there. So already, you know, you walk into this amazing field surrounded by woodland and you know, Into the Wild has just been there, and the bluebells everywhere, and it's incredibly magical.
So are you going to take it into that little woodland area?
Yeah, we're going to have stuff going on in the woods and all around. And
is it kind of under wraps? What's kind of going on?
not really. So we're going to have there's a labyrinth planned. Which will be, I guess, in the evening, it will be lit up. And that's sort of a little bit, you got to go on a bit of a journey to find
it. Oh, okay.
And there's going to be a woodland stage with music during the day, and then that will go up into DJs in the evening. But we're going to really go to town on that and have a lot of lights and lasers and projections.
I guess for anyone who's ever been to a zoo party, there's a lot of theatrics and a lot of kind of a lot of it is in the atmosphere, and you know, has been created with objects and lights and things like that. So it should be quite a special occasion to see how you extrapolate that to a festival. I mean. Like you said, there's a lot of hard work going on, but I guess you'll be partying as hard as anyone else maybe on the day.
Well, I think the intention is to engineer myself out of a job. So
that's perfect.
But I think the reality will be that, you know, I am slightly some people would say, particularly OCD. In my, you know, because it all comes down to detail for me.
Yeah,
and if I, you know, some people are wired that way, and I, I think I have six Virgos in my chart. So anyone who knows Virgos is all about detail and
okay.
So I could be sitting here and I'll just, you know, feel comfortable, or anywhere, and then I'll see something that might just be slightly out of place and kind of
I know what you feel.
And I think, you know, so that adds up. So I can be walking around, and I was doing that all the time at zoo, where I'd just be tweaking and, you know, making just changes here and there. But you'll reach a point where you just go, okay, that's it. It's sort of now it feels.
I think that came across as well. Like, it's kind of, I've never seen such an artfully organized amount of stuff.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, that's it. Because some people would just say, oh, God, this place is just filled with junk and it's all. But
if it had been organized in a different way, perhaps that's more, you could understand that a bit more. But the way it was, things were positioned in certain points and at certain heights. And, you know, there was a lot of. Like you say, there's a lot of thought gone into it.
Yeah.
Over a long period of time. So I think it's more than just a lot of stuff in a place.
Well, that was the real gift we had at Zoo, was the time that we were allowed to be there. So in 8 years, it was literally like just layer upon layer of people visiting, events happening, and you know, every month there'd be a gang of people sort of setting up and doing some adding different flavors to it, and that would just keep sort of being in the build up of the feeling that people got when they went there. So after years of just adding to it, and that's the difference with a festival, where you know, go out into a field and set it all up, have a wonderful weekend, but then you've got to take it down in the end. So ultimately, my dream is to find somewhere where that can be home, or it can be a place where we can do it long term. So so you can do the same there, and you're actually building, you know, long term into the.
So do you have like a kind of a longer term vision for the kind of the zoo ethos or the zoo?
I think, you know, the ethos is really just. I suppose is a combination of lots of people who have different ideas, but we all seem to be on the same page, which is generally wanting to make the world a better place, and you know, doing that through being open-hearted and sharing and kind and loving and creative, and you know, all the things that seem to make people feel better.
Yeah.
And, so that, but everyone's doing it in their own different ways. So, you know, and I think there's not, so in that sense, there's not really an ethos as such, but I think
Is,
you know, it's not, some people possibly think that zoo is some kind of cult. And, I don't know, but it's a wide umbrella, if you like.
It's kind of built by the people that are part of it. You know, it's so the ethos includes all the ethoses of the people who.
Yeah, exactly.
Who
and it was, you know, you mentioned earlier about the. Just that feeling people get when they went there, and I was very touched quite often where people would say they'd hadn't been there before, and the first time they went there, they said they would feel at home. And that was generally that feeling.
Yeah.
And that, and obviously that's the people as well. It's a combination of the building and the ambience. But, you know, when they walk in and you're seeing kindred spirits around. And
it felt like some sort of cosmic womb space to me. Like very, very kind of out there, but also very, very, very safe.
Yeah.
Which is not a normal combination. It's normally like it's one or the other. So have you been... have you been kind of taking inspiration from other festivals that you've been to over the years, or is it have you been out doing research, or you know, through your?
There's obviously loads of amazing things going on at different festivals, but I haven't
deliberately kind of set
out. No, I think, you know, I've got a warehouse here filled with lots of bits and bobs, and and we've got a beautiful field, and there's going to be other people bringing their pieces to put in the puzzle. But you know, it's going to be a mixture of all these elements, and then that's where you get the kind of alchemy of it, is the intentions and all the energy that people bring to it. We've got a full moon on Saturday night.
Ah, fantastic.
Which is always
always a good addition. One if you want to let your hair down.
And also I like the numerology of things. So we did, the last big outdoor one was on the 888, which was just at the beginning of Zoo Days. So, this feels like a kind of whole...
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of
stage on from that. So we got, this is the 777, basically.
Ah, okay.
So it's the 7th of the 7th, 2017.
Yeah. It feels like a culmination of... because I imagine you're involving people who've been part of the evolution of the space and of, you know, over the years. So it's like a kind of... It's like a culmination of 10 years of creativity or 10 years of... I don't know how you'd say it, really. It's kind of a metamorphosis of all these different inputs and over this period of time with this kind of common aim, and now it's kind of birthing into a new form as a festival space.
Well, there is definitely the birthing analogy, I suppose, or you know, it's the back to the numbers thing, like 2016, which was when Zoo finished, is a 9, so that was a completion, and it started on a 1. So actually, that was a perfect cycle, starting in a 1 year to a 9 year. And 2017, is the new beginning of a new cycle. So that's nicely synced up.
Couldn't get it better than that. Yeah.
So it, and a lot of people are feeling that. It's like, you know, 2016 was quite challenging for a lot of people. Oof, and it was sort of the end of lots of things. So there's a real
I really felt that at the start of this year, that there was a new wave, was a bit of a new wave that you could catch, you know, of momentum or of potential pushing onwards. So it really feels like that this year. That's great. So you've got this happening. This is, so we should just recap really and say what it is and when it's happening, and so
in 2 months today is the 7th of July.
2 months actually today?
Today is Friday, and I don't know if it's exactly 2 months, but it's starting on Friday the 7th of July. And a lot of people are asking, where is it? Because we haven't actually put where the venue is, which I think we will do soon onto the website. But it's half an hour north of Lewis. It's near a beautiful, I mean, it's in the most idyllic part of the world, a place called Hartfield, Cowden, and it's a farm called Broomlands, which is where Into the Wild has been, and Wild Heart both had festivals there. And it's a, you know, very high vibrational land that is just dripping in bluebells at the moment.
Yeah, it's going to be fantastic, I think. We'll give the website again at the end, but it's zootopia.space, isn't it, if you want to find out and buy tickets?
www.zootopia.space.
Yeah, and I'll mention that again at the end. So you were talking just a bit a minute ago about the numerology and the circles of completion, and how was... a lot happened in the period where Zoo was... under threat of closure, and there was a big demonstration, and there was a lot of kind of activism around trying to get the local authorities to support the continuation of this. How did you already have a sense that it was coming to a completion, and you were wanting to fight as long as you could.
Yeah.
So how was that year of kind of uncertainty?
Well, it was more than a year of uncertainty. It was, you know, it was, like I said,
well, we said the whole,
it was
whole
8 years of uncertainty.
But was there a point where they kind of became more interested in the site again after you've not really heard from them for a few years?
Well, no, it was, so in a nutshell, the original developer who, you know, he was public enemy number one in Lewis years ago. But ironically, he was the guy who gave all of the artists the keys to these buildings and allowed what happened to happen. So, name check, Charles Stiles, who, in a way, he was one of us. He was, you know, he wasn't your standard developer. But back then, his plans obviously were not ideal for, you know, he still wanted to knock it all down and build loads of stuff. But
even back when you were first getting
the... Yeah, so he'd had plans going on for a few years already, but he was still trying to get the planning permission. But he, you know, he let people move in and do stuff, and he'd come to the parties there, and he'd be playing his flute.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wow, I'm not your average...
Not your developer. Average developer. But then 2008 financial crash.
Yeah.
And I forget when it actually sunk in, but I think it was 2009 or whatever. You know, he ran out of money. And that was when this whole kind of saga started to, you know, it was this very convoluted unfolding. So he ran out of money. The bank took over. It was Anglo-Irish Bank, which was then nationalised.
Wow.
So for a while, our landlords were the Irish people.
Wow.
And then they did a fire sale, and the whole site was bought by these new developers. But that was controversial as well, because it was meant to be, there was a sort of closed bid auction.
So no one had any opportunity to...
Well, no, so the Lewis Community Land Trust put in a bid of $5 million for the whole of this 15-acre site.
Yeah.
Which is peanuts, you know, it's nothing.
Yeah.
But that would have been, you know, it would have taken it on a whole different...
Yeah, long
trajectory.
Term.
Slow development, community owned, you know, it would have been very interesting to have seen what happened. But as it was, they, Santon, who are this slightly shady developing outfit, who I think are funded by South African pension funds, or I don't know, something like that.
They're based in this country.
I think they're a bit offshore.
Okay.
But anyway, they won the bid by 200,000. So their bid was 5,200,000 or something like that. So they got it. And a lot of people said, you know, there was a few backhanders going on. So who knows, listeners?
Yeah.
Who knows?
That does sound a little whiffy.
Exactly. So then suddenly we've got new landlords, and things then get a bit more, you know, and they, before that we'd just been paying the rates, and then suddenly I'm having to negotiate with the men in suits who want to start charging lots of rent, and so that was kind of when things started to go, you know, we had a little bit more security, I suppose, in the way of they were going, yeah, nothing's going to happen here for a while. But we then needed to respond to that by going, okay, well, we'll put on events and more events to,
yeah,
you know. And obviously the money wasn't the motivation with that, but it was just a necessity to, you know, to keep things moving.
Yeah, sure.
But even then, so it was just that was where 2009, 10... I suppose looking back, there was probably like a 3 year, maybe 2010, 11, 12, 13, where there was so much going on, and it felt like, you know, there was this real bubble of, you know, it felt like maybe it could have gone on indefinitely.
Yeah. Yeah.
And more and more people were finding us, and just the, I don't know, there was a real it's hard to put it into one word, but then I suppose when you start expanding, and there was all these challenges coming up, so the fire brigade turned up one day and put a prohibition order on us.
As in, that means you can't enter the building, or
as in going this place. In fact, this was early on, so that happened quite early on. That was them going, yeah, this place is not safe. You need, and this is a very controversial thing because there was a fire in a similar place out in America not that long ago.
Yeah,
and
no,
a lot of people died. So. And there were parallels drawn just in terms of community space and the kind of things that were going on. So I look back on that with a real sense of gratitude at the job of the fire brigade, doing their job, coming round and going, sorry, guys, you need to really get on top of it. So for 6 months, we couldn't do any events, but we did all the work that they asked for, put in all the emergency lighting and built firewalls around different spaces.
Paid for by yourselves?
Yeah. So that was all, a lot of love and help from people and just people coming and go. And that was always the really inspiring thing, you know, if there were challenges and then it was just collectively we'd sort them out.
Mm.
And, you know, there was a guy in Lewis who worked on working at the Amex Stadium just as a labourer. And this was literally a week after, or rather a week before, he offered me 10 brand new fire doors that had been scratched and they were slightly damaged, but they were still totally fine.
Yeah.
And I needed to put in a whole lot of fire doors. You know, that was the way it worked there. You just needed stuff and people would bring it. And so that was amazing. So then, 6 months later, they came round and said, well done, guys, you're good to go, and ticked us off. And I think actually that was really when the things started. You know, it was like we were legal,
safe.
And it always amazed me, actually. There was some element of we were starting off under the radar, and there was that sense of we were a little bit, you know, kind of on the edge of, there was us on one side of the river and Tesco's on the other. And that was quite symbolic
in a lot
of ways.
Yeah.
But in spite of all of that, the council would give us a license every month to have a party, and we would have an all-night party pretty much every month. And because Tesco's was where it was, they would absorb all the noise going over the river. And this is, again, it's where how I look back and go, actually, it's really amazing that this was allowed to happen and that the council gave us permission in a way to do it. I was sitting up on the downs not long ago looking down and on Lewis, and I always felt that we were on the edge. You know, not just metaphorically, but actually when you look at Lewis, the Phoenix Industrial Estate is right in the middle of Lewis.
Mm.
So there you've got this, and it was like a bubble.
Yeah.
You know? But right in the middle of one of the most expensive towns in the country. And there we were doing our thing.
So, there's a great, delicious irony about that.
Yeah.
And also something quite beautiful about, you know, all these seeds being planted.
Exactly. Well, for me, it boils down to just the intent of it. And you have this very powerful, you know, collective field and intention. And, that's when magic really happens. And it was a case of, no, we'll keep, there would always be another hoop to jump through or situations to sort out and problems to work through, but you do it.
Well, I think it all adds up to, like you say, magic when people all collaborate in that way.
And
mean, it's like it's funny how it came to a close in the year of the closings, but then almost in a way it's just perfect. Like you said before, it just there's a sense of well, that just, you know, that was the time that
absolutely
part of the journey came to a close.
Really, and going back to what you're saying about the protests and all of that, I mean, that was a natural response by the community to stand up and go, you know.
And that involved people that maybe hadn't come, you know, it started to involve more of a wider circle of people in the town who suddenly, maybe they hadn't really, maybe they'd never been, but they knew of it, or that they'd had friends who'd been, or that kind of thing. But it felt like the influence of Zoo and what it represented and all the other businesses and, you know, and workshops in that area, suddenly people were like, oh yeah, it is important that these spaces are there. Oh yeah, you know, something, when something's under threat, then people sit up and go, oh yeah, shit, well, we need to save that, or we need to try. You know, even if at the time that it's not really something they're engaged with on a kind of on a personal level, but it becomes this kind of social responsibility, perhaps, for people to help protect or help try and save something that's putting love out into the world, or putting good things out into the world. And, Were you surprised about how the local community? I mean, it wasn't fully supported by the local community, but
no, a lot of. I don't know. It's hard to say numbers, but I think there's a lot of people in Lewis who probably just looked over the river and just saw the vans in the yard and just saw this rundown place and still thought, you know, bunch of dirty hippies or whatever, but. The people who took the time to come and explore what was on their doorstep, you know, they found a different story, and there was so much going on down here, and it really was, and still is to a degree, because there is still stuff going on, but it's been, you know, massively
dispersed,
fragmented now. But it was. There was a name for it. Something cluster. And, you know, developers, town developers who will spend millions building some new development, and that's what they long for, is to fill it with something, you know.
Right.
But it happens everywhere. And, you know, when artists or creative people or just whatever, things pop up and at the right time. And more often than not, they are, you know, moved on. It's happening the world over. But I think there's an element of, for me personally, you know, we stood up and made a real song and dance about it. But also there is a point where you have to you know, surrender, but not in the, we're lying down, but you can't fight these things forever, and so you move on and just go, okay, well, we'll do something else somewhere else.
Acceptance.
So, yeah, exactly. Mm. And actually, for me, there was a sense of relief. And you're right, you know, saying it, that was definitely of a time, and it was an amazing time. But, you know, you look at anything, like a lot of festivals, even, they reach a point where they go over the hill, or they go past it.
Yeah, the magic's gone. And
Yeah,
I remember I used to go to the Big Chill years ago, when that first started, and that was, you know, the first few years were amazing, really, really lovely bunch of people, beautiful setting, one of the most beautiful sites I'd ever been to. Did you ever go to that at Eastner Castle?
It's like
in this valley with lakes and beautiful woods.
No, it's incredible. Man.
Such a nice site. And one year I went, and it was just really lost it, and the audience was like, they'd expanded it by like a third or some 25%, something massive, and most of the people there were very different kind of people that had previously been going, and the whole feel changed. It just became really commercial, and kind of killed it, really. It feels like with what you and the whole kind of Zoo team are doing with this. It feels like an evolutionary thing. It's not like exactly. A kind of right, we've burnt out or it's dead. It's kind of like, no, that's just the cycle, the element of these cycles which you refer to. And I think that's a really nice way to look at things, because that is how, you know, that's what we live in. We live within cycles of cycles of cycles within cycles. So seeing that as a chance to start again from that place of
I mean, I see it a bit like, if anything, just the foundation, if you like, or the first chapter. And, you know, it was where a lot of people came together. Loads of beautiful friendships were made and people, you know, relationships and babies and came from Zoo. So it was there was this coming together and a foundation. And so now it feels like, okay, it's almost like chapter two, whatever, or just see where that energy goes, and it is definitely a metamorphosis.
Have you got any is there any kind of longer term vision or ideas that you've been thinking about beyond the kind of festival or permanent space?
One of the recurring themes at Zoo and conversations, and I think it's probably on many people's minds these days, is the uncertainty in the world and people wanting to become self-sufficient and not be relying on, you know, the electricity coming through your plugs and the water coming out of your tap and all of that. And sharing resources and, you know, being closer together. So I suppose, we'd often have talks or workshops where people would
along these kind of themes
about living in community and you know, it's in a way it's almost become a cliche now and people are doing it everywhere, and so it is happening everywhere and more people are going out and finding their little bit of land here or there. And so I suppose that's ultimately my dream will be to find some land, or whether it's in this country or somewhere else, and but I think it will be closer to home.
Okay.
The next stop, and then build some beautiful homes in the trees or earthships or whatever. So just really, for me to have.
To make it more of a permanent, long-lasting kind of thing, rather than this kind of there's a festival, once a year or something, and keep it more of something that can endure, for generations, maybe.
Well, that's always what the dream is, to build stuff that grandchildren, great grandchildren can enjoy, and the challenge. Going back to the very beginning, talking about the system and how it's difficult.
The
licensing and
there's
that's
a lot of lockdown.
About. It's very difficult for people to do that. But even that, I think, is changing. And I am ultimately quite optimistic about things, even though there's a lot of crazy stuff, negative stuff going on in the world. But I suppose the other analogy of birthing pains. is where what's going on now.
So what keeps you going with the, like you just alluded to, there is a lot of as people are very aware, there are a lot of political instabilities and pressures, and there's a lot of different forces acting on people more visibly perhaps or more palpably these days than perhaps in previous years. And what keeps you optimistic? What keeps you feeling, looking forward and driving forward and wanting to keep doing what you're doing?
What is it? What is that?
I guess there's many things, but
I think really is the influence and the effect that we have on the world. It can come in different ways, but really, it's acting in your immediate environment. And obviously people are working on doing amazing projects around the world and actually having very big impact and bringing big change to the world, but Personally, yeah, it's going back to what I was saying about, you know, I like to create spaces, get people together, and, you know, it's just really...
There's that thing about starting at your back door or starting in your, you know,
yeah,
in your town or your village or wherever you happen to be.
Think globally, act locally. That's
yeah.
So really... And that's why it feels like the next stage, the next step would be to have some land and to be able to do that in somewhere in Sussex.
Mm. And kind of model community or model that kind of lifestyle or that kind of living. And I guess you could take that out and use it as a place of education and use it as a place of, you know, doing all the things that you were doing.
Yeah.
But just on somewhere more long-term, on a long-term basis.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm.
So that was the at Zoo, the three words were inspiration, education, celebration. And that's kind of the Zootopia
yeah.
thing as well. So, you know, we've all got things to teach each other. And we can always keep being educated. And inspiration is all around us if we choose to look for it and yeah. are open to it.
Yeah.
And celebration is a very important thing to, you know, celebrate life. And
yeah,
what we have,
well, I think so. It's part of our history, isn't it, as, yeah. as a species, gathering at certain times and celebrating things. And there's a lot of that that doesn't happen, you know, these days, and yeah. causes a lot of problems. Where the celebration is misdirected through other means or through other to other ends, or just becomes kind of an unconscious celebration rather than
yeah, yeah.
something where people are actively engaged in what they're doing and why they're doing it. Yeah. So yeah, it's exciting. It's very exciting. Yeah. I have a nice vision forming in my head of what that could look like, you know. So you'd rather keep it in this in the southeast of the UK, would you? If that was an option.
You know, I'm open to whatever comes along.
I guess you never.
But
know.
It feels like increasingly I'm blown away by how beautiful Sussex is, you know, and. It's very amazing. I grew up in Surrey, which is you know, amazing place up there as well. But I've always felt, actually Lewes has felt probably more than Brighton. I was in Brighton for a long time, but I really felt at home in Lewes. So yeah, maybe not too far from here.
Mm.
But then having said that, you know, maybe something in France or Spain or Portugal. There's a lot of people heading over to Portugal
now. Oh, yeah,
now.
Yeah, yeah. It's very, and, very popular.
But I'd like to have a base here and be able to, you know, we're all kind of nomadic at heart, so I think, you know, some time here and then...
Yeah, there's something about connecting to or keeping a connection with the place that you, you know, the place you are of. Or being, you know, having that sense of connection to the place of your birth and the place of your ancestry,
yeah.
Even if you're in another country or you're in the middle of another culture, it's especially important, I think, at this time as well. About trying to remember that what those roots are for people from you know Western Europe who've quite often had the. There's such a kind of murky past and all this
yeah.
kind of stuff that it's very unclear, like which practices and what did our ancestors really
yeah,
do?
Yeah.
And, you know, were they yeah. into that or were they into this? And there was this mixture and there's all these other cultures that came over and started running the country for times. And I think people feel a bit, they don't feel very rooted. You know, I went through that period of feeling very unrooted in this country
yeah.
and you start to look at... you start to look at, you know, other places, more exotic places for inspiration or for, I don't know, illumination, you could say.
Yeah, yeah.
Rather than looking at your own back door.
Mm.
But I do think that's a really important piece, is the kind of encouraging people to, you know, to take an interest in that cultural history that's right there waiting to be discovered, you know.
Yep.
And indeed making new historical, is that a sentence? Making new historical, you know, forming new cultural memory, you know, by creating something that's going to be on your land that, you know, that's going to potentially could be there for the future generations. So.
Well, we're definitely on the cusp of, you know, this, whatever it is, everyone is sensing, you know, massive change going on now. And it, you know, you're talking about different cultures, and it's quite controversial now, the whole cultural appropriation thing.
Yeah.
And that is a big thing. And obviously there's, you know, we need to be sensitive to that. But I think, you know, we're all Indigenous, really.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that it's easy to, you know, look at all these amazing cultures around the world and see what's going on there, and we're having connections with all these different things, but yeah, the British Isles is rich with its own traditions. And I think just sadly, you know, Western culture the problem is the disconnect. So we look at, you know, cultures overseas who might be more just connected to the earth, and there is an easier,
more an unbroken kind of
thread
traditional
of connection to their ancestors and their past. But you know, it's not that, you don't have to go that far back here where we were.
Yeah, I mean, it's so much more visible than, say, in North America. Like if you're a white kind of European descent and you're in North America, Caucasian. Or even of anyone who's in you know, their past is quite near. It's quite kind of like, yeah, we know it's within a couple of generations. We can see where that came from, and so it's kind of like, but on their immediate land is, there's not so much, there's no real signposts of cultural history other than the people that were there originally.
Yeah, the people that they
displaced.
Genocide.
And yeah, to put it mildly.
Yeah. But there's so much of, you know, this is where the collective guilt of, you know, we're carrying a huge amount of trauma, guilt, all of that. And it's not just us. This is planetary, collective issues. And this is a big part of where we've got to just not necessarily keep looking back and dwelling on them. Okay, they need to be addressed and acknowledged, but... You know, I think it's just about moving forwards and going,
yeah,
right, where can we go from here?
Yeah, and what can we create? And there's a lot of exciting, I always thought there's a lot of exciting opportunities in a way coming from a place where, you know, your roots are not as clear, because it means you can create some new ones.
Yeah.
In a sense, you know, you're kind of at a frontier point where you're like, right, well, you know, I can develop my own way of doing something, or you know, it's ripe with potential, because by definition you're not really sure. There's no like long standing tradition behind you of you know, this is the way we do things, this is the way we celebrate, this is the way we you know, whatever you want to do, have weddings, or, you know, we can kind of be creative with it and form new traditions, you know, which is
make it up as we go along.
Yeah, but in the most beautiful sense of that, you know, like, it's fresh, it's kind of, it's really alive. And then I think there's something really nice about that, as much as it is beautiful in its own way, to have this like unbroken tradition. That must be incredible, you know, if you're born into that culture and to be part of that and have the responsibility to carry that with you, you know.
But then even then, you've really got to look at, you know, why were they doing that?
Yeah.
I mean, it made me laugh. You see, I think it was somewhere in China or Japan, or I think it was some island out in the east, and you saw these guys with red bands around their heads. This was all the men from the village, and they had these massive, great tree trunks. And they would get on these tree trunks and ride them down this very steep hill. And it was like a race. I think there was a few of them. And it was this incredible spectacle, seeing all these men, knowing that people were potentially going to die. People were falling off.
People were going to die?
Well, yeah, people did die. Some people got injured, broken bones. You're literally riding this huge crate.
Like a whole tree trunk.
A whole tree without branches. So it was like a, you know, it could be 4 or 5 feet in diameter across.
With the bark on, kind of, they just trim the branches off.
And it might be 20 feet long or something.
Oh, my God. Down a hill.
Down a hill. It's like the equivalent of, you know, the quaint English chasing a cheese.
Yeah.
Down a hill. But they were doing it on a bloody great tree.
Wow.
And so, yeah, it just made me laugh going, well, why do people do that? And because they always have, you know. And it's, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Sure.
But it's also going, you know, at some point some people started a tradition.
Yeah.
And then it gets followed, and that's wonderful. But you can look at a lot of these traditions and go, well, are they relevant today?
Yeah, questioning, yeah.
And that's really a question to go, well, just because we've always done it something in a particular way doesn't mean that we have to continue doing
it.
And I think so more and more we've actually really got to check in with why we do. Why do we do the things we do? Because a lot of the habits we have these days are pretty unhealthy, and you know, and on a national level or a sort of international level.
Yeah, I think that can apply to many different kind of things, really, can't it?
Yeah.
I mean, the pace of life, it seems to have changed a lot, you know, over the last kind of 10, 15 years, and with the introduction of everyone's got a computer in their pocket, and you know, and everyone's kind of connected through this invisible web of information. What do you think that's going? Do you like technology, and do you enjoy kind of the creative?
I can appreciate it for as a tool that it is, and I think we're incredibly clever as a species. But I think for me, the scary thing is, it is a little bit like a runaway train, and it's almost like Pandora's box. You know, it's come out, and where does it stop? Where do you draw the line?
Yeah, we don't know.
And you look at genetics and artificial intelligence, all of this stuff. You know, it depends who is doing it and what's the intent behind it. Unfortunately, most people in these laboratories are being paid by multinationals. And it is all about money and control. And, you know, I think there's some pretty dark and sinister agendas going on in the world. And so you can, you know, and this is where it comes back to, do we focus on that? And obviously people are, you know, there's people who are very wide awake and aware of all,
yeah, on the front line, as it were.
Crazy stuff going on in the world. And yet, we can't spend our lives just totally preoccupied with...
No, well, it's completely overwhelming.
It is. That's the challenge of where, you know, where do you place your attention?
Yeah.
Do you spend your life focused on that, or do we just, you know, do the best we can in our environment? And
with the skills we've gotten...
And I suppose so. That, I mean, it's a massive one, really, because there is this very powerful. It's almost like I see it like the two worlds, or multiple timelines are opening up. You know, you have these people who seem to have a death wish, who are creating this world, which is more and more about disconnection from the earth, from our kind of, you know, life source, if you like, and are relying on artificial intelligence. And there is, you know, if you do look into that, it is a very dark world, because it seems to be more about taking away the kind of true spark of humanity and taking it somewhere different. So all of that, and obviously the environmental degradation that's going on. But equally, you know, there's all these incredible things creative things going
responses
on.
Responses to these things.
And a lot of that is scientific as well. So I'm not anti-science, but I'm just, you know, I think, you know, we're so yeah, it's almost like you have just this new breed of very incredible, optimistic people who are literally creating the new world that they want to see. And that's where it's coming from, no limit of, you know, the mind. It was like, well, we can't do this or we can't do that. But, you know, young people today are just going, you know, we can.
But that's where things, that's how things change, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, over a period of time, there's still this, there's not this like, or hopefully there's not this point where everything just breaks and we have to start again. There's like,
no. There's
always these concurrent layers of different stages. And, you know, especially at grassroots level, there's people, you know, inventing stuff, researching stuff, building stuff, coming up with new ideas and new inventions, you know, and all this stuff kind of, depending on the point in its gestation, it's sort of in development, or it's just, you know, it's all bubbling up to the surface. But it's generally it's runs underneath the current of what's going on a day-to-day level of how mainstream society functions. So these kind of things just bubble up, and then slowly at certain points, and they just burst through into a wider adoption or wider awareness. You know? So all the time, I think there are these kind of currents of people doing creative, beautiful, interesting, you know, magical things. But perhaps now it's going to be more of a time where that's more visible, or it's more easy for other people to join in those kind of enterprises and to collaborate on things, and then just like, yeah, the other people who are doing that stuff, it's more visible, and that's partly due to technology and the internet, I guess. You can kind of find the people who are doing, you know, something that you're interested in, and go and work on it, go and learn from people, you know, the opportunities to get involved in local projects and grassroots projects is, you know, it's crazy these days. There's some great stuff going on everywhere, you know, so it gives me a lot of hope, I think, that kind of stuff. And like you say, that's where you need to place your attention, I think, rather than you know, we have to have an awareness of what's going on globally, but if we start to just like place all our attention there, we just go mad, just like lose it.
But we also need to make a song and dance and kick up a real,
it's such a
fuss, you know,
balance, isn't it, to kind of have that
it is, it's very difficult, very difficult, you know. I mean, the fracking was a good example of that, and there was a you know, when fracking came to Bulkham, and and it was incredible seeing everyone come out and get together there, and there's, you know, that's carrying on since then. But it is everywhere you look, you know, there's that level of devastation going on.
I mean, it can't go on forever, can it?
No.
It can't go on forever. At some point there's you know, either somebody comes up with a new way of using energy, or of or there needs to be systems to replace the systems. And that's kind of what I guess maybe I'm alluding to. I'm talking about things that are being developed underneath the things that are already going on.
I think there's a lot just waiting in the wings.
And
that, you know, the speed of change, that can happen very quickly,
you
know, when they come through. No, I mean, that is exciting. It is exciting. But it's also, you know, the very powerful people who invested in these other things.
That's,
I mean, they're not going easily. And so, but no, I'm pretty optimistic ultimately, in spite of all of that, because, like you say, you know, it's just people doing their thing.
And it's where we are, like right now. You know, you've got to be where you are right now to have any. To really enjoy it as well, and that you have to have that, you have to be able to enjoy things as well. It's got part of life, isn't it? It's the dichotomy of, like, you know, everything's fucked but everything's amazing at the same time sometimes. You know, and that's beautiful. That's just the reality of living and being, you know, being a human sometimes. Is that you just live with those opposites, within those opposites. So how did you go about selecting, you know, there must have been so, although I know there was so many different artists and musicians that have played at Zoo over the years. How did you go about choosing who's going to play the first?
It was actually
festival?
Very easy, because in a lot of ways, people would approach me and phone up or email or just come by. And so often it was just a case of saying yes, you know, and that would be in all different ways. People coming, wanting to have a space, people wanting to come and help out, people wanting to come and perform. Or
so almost a lot of the work that many festival organisers would you know, traditionally have to do, which is finding people to play and people to run workshops and all that kind of stuff, has almost been done, in a way, been done over the course of the previous Zoo incarnation.
Yeah. So well, a lot of, if not all of the people at Zootopia have played at Zoo over the years.
And people kind of doing workshops and running different things. And
so it really is like a, you know, a kind of microcosm of all of that time there. And it will be a very good, because there's a lot of people who heard about it and never made it there, and so they'd say, yeah, we want to come and check out Zootopia, and you'll get a good sense of the energy from, you know.
Have you got size in mind, like a kind of maximum size, or is it just kind of
for this one 1600 people?
Okay, yeah.
So it's kind of a, you know, there's, it's a good size. A lot more than that, and then you start, you know, you kind of
lose that. You need
a bigger
site.
So there'll be about 400 crew and performers and, you know, extended crew, and then 1,200. Challenge is actually getting the license. So
Is it the case that once you've got one, then it becomes easier in the future, or is it a case-by-case basis?
There's a whole story in that, because officially the premises license is you have it, and you have it every year. But this is where there's a problem with this application, because I won't go into the details. But
yeah.
I'll need to. Effectively, yes, it is. Once we've sorted this out, it will be a lot easier next year.
And is this, it's not planned to be a one-off at this point? Are you planning to just see how the first one goes and then we'll see if there's another one, or is the idea to
I'd love it to be an annual thing. And that's the point. A lot of the legwork and the stress and strain and work that's going on now is, you know, there'll be a lot less to do next year.
It's another layer of foundation, as you were talking about before, but like, so, you can build on next year.
And again, the teams, the people, you know, there's all of the great Zoo crew who did so much over the years and coming together now. So there is this kind of collective anticipation and excitement about, what can we do this time?
Let's just recap. The website is
www.zootopia.space.
And there you can find out who's playing, what's going on.
It's got everything on there. We're going to get an app soon as well, which will allow people to, this is going back to the embracing technology, taking the best of it. And it's quite exciting. We'll be able to message people through the app on site and tell them that this band are going to be playing in 5 minutes, or this workshop is happening in 10 minutes.
That's cool. That's really cool.
And you'll have maps and all sorts
assuming they've got signal, or does it work without that?
You do need a signal, but there is a signal there.
I presume you check that before you built the app.
Yes. It's not an amazing signal, but it's enough to
enough for it to work. That's a great idea, little notifications about things. Perfect for when you've kind of got up a bit late and, you know, so-and-so's going on, you've forgotten about this or that. It's all the kind of things that generally happen.
So probably next week, actually, that'll be coming out.
Brilliant. So have you done that kind of again, is that with people involved in the immediate
That's a lovely guy called Daniel who again, he approached me and offered to build it. So and it is amazing, just the collective experience and gifts that everyone brings, and you know, it's always like that in a community where somebody has got
the skills,
you know, everyone has something to bring to the table, whatever it is, and I love that, you know, it's, I think that's what
yeah, just recognizing that though as well, you know, like that everyone has their not everyone's experience is the same, not everyone's abilities are the same, everyone has these like unique kind of inputs that they can bring.
Yeah, and I'm totally not, well, that was saying I'm on a steep learning curve of learning about Excel sheets and all of that, but generally I kind of exclude myself from being technically minded. So yeah, everyone's got something to put in the mix. And there's going to be all sorts in the mix at Zootopia.
So is there, there's kind of a long, I mean, music, obviously, there's going to be a big focus on music and celebration. And what are you kind of looking to bring in addition to that, like on a kind of workshop level or talks or?
Yeah, so we did the zoo response to TED Talks, which was Zed Talks. And that was after they banned Rupert Sheldrake.
I was at that one in London, really? Actually, yeah, where they did that.
So that became a bit controversial. So Zed Talk started where we were having, you know, very interesting speakers. So there's going to be the symposium, a beautiful wedding tent, and we've got, yeah, a whole variety of speakers there, David Bramwell. So, yeah, talks and storytelling, bit of theatre in the symposium, and then all sorts of different workshops. Lots of stuff for the kids. There's going to be a big kids' village. Philosophy for the under fives. That's one of them.
That's a great idea.
Yeah. Sinead is doing that. And the whole, yeah, healing and well-being was a big part of Zoo. So there's going to be a very dedicated area for that. Pete and Lil's We the Uncivilized Cinema. Showing their film and all sorts of other inspiring films. And we're going to have the gallery, so obviously there's got to be art. Amazing visionary artists and
people.
So there's going to be the Zubian Gallery, Zubian Arts.
That's going to be a tent space?
Yeah.
Sounds like you've got all the bases covered, pretty much.
Well, there's a lot of pieces. There's a lot of pieces, but it just needs, you know, tweaking and fine tuning, you know.
Yeah.
So I've had a lot of that already in, but it still amazes me every day at the amount of organisation and the amount of the volume of stuff that needs sorting out. You know?
Yeah.
Right now it's a case of selling tickets. We've already sold, you know, quite a few, but there's still a lot to sell. So is obviously a really important part of it.
So if you're on the fence, kind of,
if
take,
you're on the fence,
jump.
Then I dare you to come and dive into the wonderful world of Zootopia.
Yeah, I think it's going to be, as I say, I've got a feeling it's going to be a pretty magical occasion.
Yeah, and I trust that, yeah, most people leave it to the last minute to buy tickets, but, you know, so we should sell it.
Brilliant. Well, if that hasn't convinced you to go, that we've spoken about today, I don't know what will. But thank you for your time, Martin, today, and
pleasure.
For sharing all the stories and the history and the foundation of this whole crazy zoo phenomenon and where it's going to go next. And I wish you all the best with it.
Thank you. Thanks, Jody.